Phoenix FM.
AJ Soundbeast.
AJ Soundbeast.
I'm Antonia Jones. You'll know me from Phoenix FM's Saturday Breakfast Show. I'm a journalist and an author in the making, and I love talking. For me, good conversation leads to a greater mindset, and it's through this podcast that you can hopefully make the best out of life through my chats with guests about music, arts, entertainment, and culture.
AJ Soundbeast.
AJ Soundbeast.
So I've got Daniel Bailey from Get Up, Stand Up, the Bob Marley musical with me on AJ Soundbooth. So welcome, Daniel. So excited to meet you today. How are you doing?
I'm good. I was just relaxing before I head off and get ready for the show.
I know. And I'm so happy that you've managed to squeeze me in. And the night that I came to the show, you were actually playing Lee Scratch Perry at the time. And that's what captivated me. Your stage presence was amazing. Having done some research on Lee Scratch Perry, and even last night looking at when Rolling Stone magazine had interviewed him a few weeks before he'd passed away, and you just hear the name growing up. And so I did a bit of research and went back into the family history, and I knew that this was my granddad's era. And then I started asking my mum about the music and how did it make her feel. But you know when you get the name but you don't actually see the face? So you were the face of Lee Scratch Perry for me.
Oh, thank you. No, Lee Scratch Perry is playing that part has been, it's done more for me than just the performing aspect of it. I think that when personally, as a British person, a Black British person, we can end up conforming to the way our society is, which is very like straight up and down. And you can, and for me, I just become very heady, like thinking, overthinking things. And Lee Scratch Perry is not that, like, he's such a physical person. And actually playing that part has actually helped me to like, to not be so heady, to work out my emotions and what I'm feeling through movement and through expression. So yeah, that process of like learning Lee Scratch Perry, like doing my research, manifesting that, his energy through performance. Yeah, it's like channeling for me. It's like, it's almost like, oh, I get to hang Daniel up and go on at least.
Like your alter ego. So.
Yeah, exactly. But
that's how it felt. I really felt I was in the moment. So the character really came to light for me. And I just loved the hat from the tank top to the jeans. I really felt I was in that era. And as you say, you really put on that persona of Lee Scratch Perry.
I'm so sad that I didn't get to meet him. He passed while we were rehearsing. But this is the only way that I can meet him, through like this interaction of myself meeting him on stage in performance. So yeah, I feel really happy and privileged to have been allowed to explore that.
And for me, it was about representing, I would say, all of the actors who are aspiring, regardless of race, gender. I just think that you represent a wide spectrum, and we'll get more onto the work you're doing with Brixton House later. But just following Bob Marley and the story of the iconic reggae legend's life on his purposeful journey to spread love, hope and peace across the world through his lyrics and music. What did that mean to you to get that part? Like, as a child, what were your aspirations to this point? Was that always your dream?
That's a good question. And I don't want to get all like, I don't want to like do like therapy.
I do give off that vibe, you know.
You know, I've been like doing, I started like performing in theatre from 19. So I've been doing it for like 11 years now. And because I started out so young, the decisions that were made regarding my career weren't ever necessarily my own, because there was always somebody older or an agent or a teacher or a parent that has made those decisions. But through my career, I've seen the caliber of work for Black people in particular really, really change in terms of like making it a safer space for Black performers in theatre. I've seen that really change. And now I'm seeing the impact of that work being reflected in our community. And this show, more so than it being nominated for awards or anything, it has been so rewarding to see the community come out and watch this show. I've never seen it in the West End, and that is just the biggest reward, to know that I'm doing this for my grandmother, I'm doing it for my mother, I'm doing it for my aunts, I'm doing it for my uncles, I'm doing it for my dad, I'm doing it for my younger siblings. And I mean that figuratively, in terms of like the Black diaspora. It's so rewarding and more than I could have ever imagined.
Just watching the whole production throughout, looking at the reaction of the audience. And at times, as I said in my review that I'd written, I felt that I was in the era of like a Bob Marley concert at times. I had to catch myself. And just seeing the audience on the standing ovation, clapping, and just hearing a few of the kind of stories within the story that was being told and the narrative, I picked up a lot. It was talking about culture. What can we do? I felt that we were armed with some knowledge that when we go, and we were like in a lecture theatre and you have to change the world, you're empowered to go out. What do you do with that message? Because Bob Marley was about love, peace and unity and hope. And the visuals were amazing, looking at political figures there, having the sign of peace. It was about, what do I do when I leave this building?
And it's such a great direction for where theatre should be going, like, especially in terms of like society. Like during the pandemic, they were looking at cutting arts funds because they don't feel like art is instrumental in society. But this proves that it is. It has the audaciousness. It has the leverage to have huge conversations around politics, around social politics, general thoughts, to challenge them so that we can further our society in a way that is beneficial to all of us.
I would say the singing, the creators, the musicians, the full cast, I would say the multi-award winning team, Lee Hall, the writer and Clint Dyer director, they revived the Bob Marley musical for me, Bob Marley's life. It was magical. Tell me more about, you know, your work that you're doing. You're an artist associate at the Brixton House.
Yeah, so that position is has only just started, but it's literally Bolahan, who is the CEO and artistic director. I met him a couple of years ago, and we've just been following each other, and he gave me and some other artists the position just to use the space to just create and to explore for 2 years. So I'm really excited about what is going to come from that, developing my creative practice and developing my voice through art. And also I have an arts collective that I run called the Palace of the Dogs. And we're just going to use that space to just amplify our ideas around art and social politics. I personally really, really enjoy filmmaking and writing and photography. And so I'm looking to start understanding ways that I can use multimedia in live theatre, and really just amplifying the voices within my community. And that's me.
I love what you're doing. And as you say, the Palace of the Dogs, where does that name come from? What does it mean?
Well, so it has a bit of a story. So for me, the Palace of the Dogs represents the underdog. But I also don't like the word underdog, which is why I didn't call it underdog. So I called it the Palace of the Dogs because it's where we reside and we're celebrated, we're royal in our voices, our bark is amplified. And we also seek to amplify other people's voices who are like-minded like us. And the concept kind of came from Janelle Monáe.
Oh, yes. I know. Yeah. Amazing voice.
Yeah. So her first ever single, Tightrope, was set in a mental asylum called the Palace of the Dogs. And within the Palace of the Dogs, theory is that creative people are magic and that the outside world wants to suppress that magic. But within the Palace of the Dogs, the palace, you get to be that. You get to create magic.
So tell us about this magic you've created, because I've been on the Instagram page and I can see the team. They look amazing, yeah. Vibrant.
So far, it's been a real trip. Like, so we've been together for about 5 years. What we've been doing is we've been making our own work, whether that be film, mostly digital content. We have a podcast. We interview artists. We go to events, we create events. It's been a roller coaster, actually, existing in a society that monetizes marginalized voices. So as a group that just amplifies that voice, it's been hard trying to navigate who's trying to help and who isn't trying to help, who's trying to capitalize off of this, who's trying to capitalize off of that. We've needed a break just to like recalibrate and understand like what it is we're trying to do again. And we're coming back to start creating some, writing a series.
Daniel, you know, tell us about the theatre productions you starred in. I can see The Lion King. Amazing. Yeah. All the work you've done. You've been busy.
I've been very lucky in the fact that I have amazing people who have really supported me and guided me throughout my career. And it's been really great. I don't know where to begin other than things like The Lion King. That was a huge dream of mine from a kid. I remember when it opened. I remember like being a kid in productions and or going to like an after-school drama club, and then someone from The Lion King comes over and teaches you, and that inspires you. I've had, luckily, from a kid, from about the ages of 14, theatre has always been very accessible to me, and has always been something that I've been a part of. And yeah, I've been a part of some really great productions. The first ever one that I did, which was really impactful, was Hair, which I've done twice. That was really fun. The Lion King, that was my first big West End job. Yeah, then there was Motown. Yeah, I've had, yeah, I've had fun and I've worked a lot.
So what do you say to someone who is aspiring to be in your shoes and follow within, you know, your footsteps and follow their dreams? Because the doors are not always open. Can be very challenging. And to see where you are, and I always say, I don't want to wear anyone's shoes. So what would you say to them?
I would say, don't follow in my shoes. Don't do that. I would say, if I was going to talk to my younger self, what I would say to anybody who wants to be an artist or anybody who wants to work in theatre is to develop your own creative practice. And within that, somebody will say, you're great for this. And then the ball will get rolling. I would say, don't bend yourself towards a career. Let the career bend towards you.
So on to the part of the more, I would say, the more serious side in terms of the Black diaspora in your profile, like about working with those who are underprivileged in different communities. Through your arts and your work, what are you planning to bring culturally to the industry?
I like to, like your experience at Get Up Stand Up, is leave my audience asking questions, thinking, what am I going to do next with this? And that is my main focus as as an artist, especially to those who are underprivileged, Black people, the Black community, the Black diaspora. The ideas that I'd like to conceptualize within my art are around what do we look like separated from the structure of racism or this society. That might mean for some people that they want to completely go and live somewhere else, or for some people that could just be your mind. What I, as an artist, I endeavor to explore how history and society and the structure of our society and racism dictates our decisions that we make, our relationships that we make, and our aspirations for ourselves, and just kind of like deconstructing those ideas to conceptualize a creative idea of what we could look like separated from that. And that might change. I don't know where I'll be at the end of the year. I mean, right now I'm just obsessed with romantic things and love stories, but then that is again linked to the idea around how these themes affect our day to day. It affects our love. It affects everything. So I think at the crux of it, those are the things that I want to explore. I want my audiences to be able to see themselves outside of how society tells them that they must. And it's individual. And I'm not going to tell you how to look. I can only tell you, pose a question.
On that kind of creative journey, it's very challenging, and you come across so much, and it's all about reading and the different experiences. So in particular, is there any kind of books that you are reading, or I know you talked about your wife and kids that you're watching earlier, but there's nothing wrong, you know?
You know what, laughter is an act of defiance. It's a small act of defiance. So wherever you could get that small defiant move, even if it's my wife and kids, I'm so for that. But I've been really watching like a lot of like old Black British films at the moment, and it's been so fascinating to me to get into. What have I been reading? I just finished reading The Fat Lady Sings by Jacqueline Roy, and that is about, basically it's set in the 1990s, and it's set on a London psychiatric ward, and kind of explores mental health Black women at that time, and how there's a how the structure of that is at odds with how they move within their identity as Black women. Which I really, really enjoyed. It's very funny, but also very dark, very educational as well. I've also just finished reading... I've got a few. All right. I've been reading Black, Gay, British, Christian and Queer, The Church and the Famine of Grace by Jerrell Robinson Brown, where he explores Black queerness in the church, and how he reconciles his faith with his ethnicity and his sexuality, and how, and just kind of mending the relationship between the two. I've been reading Consumed, just finished reading that, The Need for Collective Change, Colonialism, Climate Change, and Consumerism by Asia Barber. And that is just about our relationship to consumerism, clothes in particular, and how that is destroying the planet, and how unfair it is, but also how closely linked it is to colonialism and slavery.
How do you manage to read them all in one go? Do you read snippets of them?
I read quite quickly, so I probably get through about a book a week.
Amazing.
Or maybe a week or two. It depends what my schedule's saying. I finished reading Bad Love by, I think it's Mami Blue. It's around the conversation of love. And it just reminds me of the BlackBerry Messenger times. And yes,
BlackBerry, I remember. Yes, it was it was completely different then, wasn't it?
Exactly, exactly. If you grew up in like the early 2000s or the 90s and you want a good love story, this is the lick. It's the last one, The Way of the Orisha, which is a book about Orishas and the Ifa religion, Nigerian religion. Which has been really great. Teaching me a lot about how to connect to my ancestors, meditations, how Orishas are linked to our everyday and how we can use them. I'll just do that, Mike.
It's an amazing, I would say, like we say, a playlist, because you learn so much from reading. And for me, it's all about learning and exploring. It expands the brain cells and you learn more about life. It's like going on holiday and you learn about different cultures. And I enjoy talking to people who love to explore reading books or knowledge, because you share knowledge. You're getting ready for tonight. So how do you prepare? Because like in a few hours, you're going to be on stage in this vibrant costume in character again.
It's weird because it kind of just happens. Like one minute you're just like at home and then next thing you know, you're in front of 1,000 people. I just kind of have to kind of check where I'm at, be honest with what I'm feeling for the day and just be wary of how much energy I have to give. And just compartmentalizing all of those things. But mostly I just read or I just plan. Just being creative, is it enough?
Do you kind of like change, like, you know, you keep to the script. Is it like keep to the script or do you kind of like play around with it a bit each night?
Because I do like the DJ bit in the opening.
Oh, I love that.
So I get to play around with that. But no, I try to stick to the script just because...
Oh, Ralph.
Where are we going? What are we doing?
But Daniel, thank you so much. You've been like a wealth of experience and this time that we've had speaking about your craft. And I'm looking forward to more of what's coming up with the Palace of the Dogs and much more. So definitely keep connected to AJ Sambooth when you've got some time. Step into the studio. Come into the creative studio that we've got. And
I'm down for that. And thanks for having me.
AJ Sambooth.
AJ Sambooth.